there is an underlying change in the way that aging is revealing itself in our bodies. I think life is just generally better.
And is a longer life necessarily a more rewarding one?
And just how many performances of Don Giovanni come on stand? 1,000, 2,000, 2 million.
This week's Radio 3 Sunday feature. Immortal Dreams at 7:45.
BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio. And you can also listen to us live online. It's just gone 1 o'clock. Time for the news now, read by Ian Skelly.
The Chancellor has said he'll use his budget this week to tackle stamp duty avoidance. George Osborne said it was completely unacceptable that rich people were buying homes through offshore companies to avoid the tax. Mr Osborne said the budget would be designed to help working people on low and middle incomes, but he refused to say whether he'd be reducing the 50 pence rate of income tax for the highest earners. Mr Osborne also announced he would be extending Sunday opening hours for shops in England and Wales during the Olympics and the Paralympics to try to stimulate the economy. The Shadow Chancellor, Ed Balls, has expressed concern, saying he wouldn't want to see Sunday trading laws relaxed permanently. An explosion in the Syrian city of Aleppo is reported to have killed a number of people. The blast is said to have been caused by a car bomb. The Syrian government said 27 people were killed yesterday by two bombs in the capital, Damascus. Libya has formally asked Mauritania to extradite Colonel Gaddafi's former intelligence chief and right-hand man. Abdullah al-Senussi, who was arrested yesterday, is wanted for alleged crimes against humanity. The Foreign Secretary, William Hague, has condemned the Iranian government's blocking of a website called UK for Iranians. The site was launched by the Foreign Office 4 days ago. An American teacher has been shot dead in Yemen. Officials said two gunmen opened fire on the man in Yemen's second biggest city, Taiz. A group linked to Al-Qaeda said it carried out the attack. The footballer Fabrice Muamba remains in a critical condition in intensive care after suffering a cardiac arrest. The Bolton midfielder collapsed yesterday during the FA Cup quarter-final against Tottenham. And the weather, the largely mild conditions in the north of the UK will continue into this evening with occasional rain. In the south of the UK, showers will die away and most areas will have a dry evening and night. But it will become chilly with frost for many areas and there'll be localised fog. That's the BBC News and the weather. It's now 1:03.
And it was read by Ian Skelly. Time now on Radio 3 for the Early Music Show with Lucy Skeeping.
My sweet little darling, sing Lulla Lullaby, a gentle cradle song from Elizabethan England, possibly by William Byrd. And how perfect to have it accompanied by the smooth, homogeneous tones of a consort of viols. The singer there was Alain Zepfel with Les Éléments. It's not often on the Early Music Show that we aim to put you to sleep, but if you feel a sense of drowsiness coming on, don't worry. Today we're looking at lullabies of all sorts, and they do come in many shapes and forms, as we're going to hear, from conventional rocking melodies or religious chant to timeless folk song and more. So for the next hour, forget about the cares of the world, grab your teddy and drift off. I saw a sweet, seemly sight, a two-voice lullaby from the 15th century performed by the singers of Anonymous Four. Lullabies are common to all cultures, of course. Anyone who's had a sleepless infant will know just how effective music can be. Whether you're in a stately home, a suburban semi or a mud hut, the same rules apply. A rocking rhythm, a mother's voice and lots of soothing repetition. And these characteristics can even be found in this lullaby from Turkmenistan. Passed down from mother to child, its origins can be traced back some 5,000 years. It describes a mother's hopes and dreams for her baby.
Ale, 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 bimendur, ale, hawe, 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 Akarjiular birantak at miswasli arayin gerisi rehalantak talantak ta thalayin kakam meke yolayin kakam meke tengel the Keve yidik paylayin, keve yidik advolta, akmanatlar deteyli.
A traditional lullaby from Turkmenistan, from a BBC archive recording. I suppose generally we tend to associate lullabies with the 19th century, don't we? Romantic songs by people like Brahms, Schubert or Schumann. But long before that, composers were using traditional lullaby tunes for inspiration to create sometimes quite complex art music, particularly in 16th century England. The composer Anthony Holborn set lullabies in popular dance forms, pavans, galliards and so on. He was a courtier in the service of Queen Elizabeth. He was a lawyer and a great lover of literature as well as a musician. First, we're going to hear The Cradle, a stately pavan played on recorders. And after that, violins and viols play at the Galliard Lullaby. But first, The Fruit of Love, an upbeat little piece that celebrates a new arrival, that cooing bundle of joy made from a union of love.
Thank you.
three dance pieces based on lullabies by Elizabethan composer Anthony Holborn. The players were the King's Music in the first and last, and the York Waits performed the middle piece, the Cradle Pavan. This next lullaby is in the form of a consort song. It's by William Byrd, a member of Elizabeth's Chapel Royal. And one of the characteristics of this kind of lineup is that the tune gets passed around from player to singer and back to the players again. There's lots of repetition, which of course is ideal for a lullaby, and a sort of weaving in and out of phrases, which makes for a really interesting listen. But often, among amateurs anyway, for whom so much of this kind of thing was written, it does mean that you can easily lose your place in the part and then have to count the bars furiously to catch up. And it's not advisable to play vile consort lullabies immediately after lunch either. The combination of a full stomach and the repeated words lullaby, come lullaby, can send you into a trance, and I speak from experience. But these pieces are ideal for social music making. One composer even named his collection Consorts for Several Friends. And they were very popular at court too, where the ability to play an instrument was as vital as being able to fence or to ride a horse. In a letter dated the 19th of September 1602, the Earl of Worcester commented on the popularity at court of country dances and Irish tunes. But, he goes on, in winter, the lullaby, an old song of Mr. Byrd's, will be much more in request, I think.
Nice.
Lullaby, My Sweet Little Baby, a consort song by William Byrd, performed by David Cordier and the viol players of Tragicommedia. You're listening to The Early Music Show here on BBC Radio 3 with me, Lucy Skeeping, and today we're exploring the enchanting repertoire of early lullabies. Lullabies also lend themselves naturally to religious interpretation. They have a gentle spirituality of their own, and even in the convents where the nuns presumably had no direct experience of motherhood, the image of the Madonna feeding Jesus or rocking him on her lap in a most human way was something that everyone could relate to and would inspire the deepest feelings of devotion. This song comes from the repertoire of the Benedictine nuns of Chester. It's a processional plainsong hymn from the early 15th century, and although it's in Latin, the refrain is unmistakable. Lully, lully, bye-bye, Lou.
Qui creavit caelum, lulli, lulli, lou. Nascitur in stabulo, bye-bye, bye-bye-bye. Rex qui regit seculum, lulli, lulli, lou. Joseph emit paniculum, nulli, nulli, nu. Mater involvit puerum, bye, 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 bye. Et ponit in precepio, nulli, nulli, nu. Inter animalia, mundi gaudia, bye 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 bye, dulcis super omnia, lulli lulli lu. Lactat mater domini, lulli lulli lu. Osculatur parvulum, bye 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 bye. Adorat Dominum, lulli, lulli, lu. Roga mater filium, lulli, lulli, lu. Ut et nobis gaudium, bye, 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 bye. In perenni gloria, lulli, lulli, lu. Sempiterna secula, nulli, nulli, nu. In aeternam et ultra, bye, 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 bye. Det nobis sua gaudia, nulli, nulli, nu.
The Della Consort there with a lullaby carol from the repertoire of the nuns of Chester. The word carol in the Middle Ages was actually a verb meaning to dance. Although we can't be sure how the movements may have looked, paintings show dancers holding hands in a circle around a tree perhaps or some flowing fountain and probably singing the words as they went. Gradually though, the word carol came to be more and more associated with Christmas. And many of the old traditional carols, even the livelier ones, were turned into sombre hymns. One of the best known is the Coventry Carol, which dates back to 1591, when it was performed by the Guild of Shearmen and Tailors as part of the city's mystery plays during the Feast of Corpus Christi. I suppose in modern terms, it's not really a Christmas carol, as the words refer to Jesus as an infant rather than to the birth itself. In fact, it's an extremely sad lament sung by three mothers of Bethlehem who know that soldiers are about to break in and kill them and their babies. In medieval times, the refrain lulla lulla meant go to sleep. But in this context, perhaps it has a darker association with death. We're going to hear the Coventry Carol at the end of this set. And before it, the harpist Andrew Lawrence King plays Lullaby Lullo, an instrumental version of the song I Saw a Sweet Seemly Sight that we heard earlier on, and which incidentally is one of the earliest documented English carols. But first, another Elizabethan carol, sometimes known as the lute book lullaby. Sweet was the song the virgin sung when she to Bethlehem Judah came and was delivered of her son, the blessed Jesus hath to name.
Thank you.
a Coventry carol performed by Sneaks Noise. The Taverner singers and players began the set with the so-called lute book lullaby, and in between, Andrew Lawrence King played a harp version of I Saw a Sweet and Seemly Sight. This sense of the personal is a really important element, even in religious lullabies. Sweet was the song we heard just now, described Mary rocking Jesus on her knee as she sings, just as any parent might do. How reassuring to feel that while the Mother of God is so powerful and protective, she can also behave just like us. This attitude is found in this next song, so exquisitely interpreted by the Spanish singer Montserrat Figueras and the group Hesperion 20. It's a lullaby from Portugal, impossible to date as it's been passed down for generations in the oral tradition, and it portrays a charming domestic setup. Joseph must rock the baby because Mary is busy washing nappies in the spring.
Signor,
The old Portuguese lullaby, José Umbala o Menino, Joseph Rocks the Infant, performed by Montserrat Figueras with Hesperian 20, in an arrangement by Jordi Savall. We'll hear them again now in a song whose roots, geographically at any rate, are not so far from Portugal. It's a lullaby from the Sephardic tradition. Sepharad means Spain in Hebrew, and the Sephardim were the Jews who'd lived in Spain for generations since the 8th century. Life was relatively peaceful for them alongside their Arab and Christian neighbours until the very end of the 1400s, when the new joint monarchs, Ferdinand and Isabella, issued a decree of expulsion. Thousands of families now made their way across the Mediterranean, many settling in the old Ottoman Empire and taking their songs with them. A repertoire with something for just about every occasion in the life cycle. Wedding songs, marriage songs, coming-of-age songs, and of course many, many lullabies. Transmitted down the female line, these folk songs could have been lost in the modern world. But just after the last war, many were collected in Israel from the mouths of old people who'd escaped the Nazis and who miraculously still spoke the old Spanish language known as Ladino. Some of the songs were kept alive by being translated into Hebrew. And here, Montserrat Figueras sings Numi Numi in that language. A mother promises that her absent husband will return that night, laden with gifts for the baby.
Thank you.
Numi Numi, hush now, sleep, my little baby girl. A Sephardic lullaby sung there in Hebrew by the Spanish singer Montserrat Figueras. The final words, though, seem to give the song a sad connotation. Your daddy's gone, gone. Will he return, or has he gone forever, perhaps? We're going to end this set, and indeed today's programme, with the lament of a deserted mother, left alone to look after her young baby. Baloo My Babe, a 17th century Scottish song set by one of Charles I's court composers, William Laws. In fact, the song seems to be based upon real life, on a Lady Anne Bothwell, whose cousin fathered her child and then disappeared. Baloo My Babe, lie still a while, and when thou wakest, sweetly smile, but do not smile as father did to cousin maidens, God forbid. Now I see that cruelty cares neither for my babe nor me. Before we hear it, though, another song with Scottish roots, Venus Birds by the Elizabethan composer John Bennett, who was a contemporary of John Dowland, and it contrasts the sound of birdsong with the singer's own sadness. These kinds of lullabies seem to try to provide comfort to the singer as well as to the child. Despite their woes, what resonates most is the timeless and universal theme of the cradle song, a mother's tender love for her baby.
to lullabies, ending today's early music show. John Bennett's Venus Birds, performed by David Cordier and Tragicomedia. And at the end there, Baloo, My Babe, set by William Laws and performed by Evelyn Tubb with lutenist Michael Fields. Today's early music show was presented by Lucy Skeeping and produced by Eva Norman. And just to mention, you can listen to the programme again via the Radio 3 homepage for the next 7 days.
BBC Radio 3 celebrates the spirit of Schubert. 8 days and 200 hours. The music and all the moments in between. Live performance, documentaries and commentary presenting a complete picture of a remarkable composer. The Spirit of Schubert. Starts this Friday afternoon at 4:30 on BBC Radio 3.
Well, back to this Sunday afternoon, just gone 2 o'clock, and now on Radio 3, this week's Sunday Concert. To present it, here's Martin Handley.
You may remember that last year the Philharmonia Orchestra celebrated the orchestral music of Bartok with a series of concerts called Infernal Dance in the Royal Festival Hall. But if you're going to cast your net over Bartok's music, you really have to catch the 6-string quartets as well, pivotal works in his career and in the quartet repertoire. With the Tokach Quartet being associate artist at the South Bank Centre, you're not going to look beyond them to perform a Bartok quartet cycle, which they did last October at the Queen Elizabeth Hall. We broadcast quartets 1, 3 and 5 at the time, and now there's a chance to catch up with 2, 4 and 6. This is music that's still, for most people, on the edge of what you might call acceptable dissonance. Even for instrumentalists who've played these works many times, they require intense concentration to do them complete justice.
This Bartok work is very, very intense, and I think our brains are just quite tired by the end of 2 evenings of Bartok. They're the peak of the quartet literature. And in that sense, maybe we're rightly a little bit daunted by this music. We really want to do the very, very best we can with it. And part of the whole rehearsal process and the whole preparation process is to get rid of those feelings of being daunted so that we can feel that we're having fun, that we're communicating characters. And I think that that is a little bit of a mountain that we have to climb, and we get to a stage like we are now and just really looking forward to the cycle.
Some of those passages, there's one lick in the second quartet. You know, I think I know it. I've practiced it. I've practiced it so much. Every violist knows exactly what lick I'm talking about in the presto, the end of the second movement. I practiced it. And every time we come back to it, I have to practice it almost all over again because it's extremely awkward. When I first played Bartok years and years ago, I thought, wow, you know, you really got to be good to play this.
I would guess from this music that he had great difficulty in expressing his emotion in other areas of his life, because there's such a sort of tortured sense sometimes in the quartets, the way the music is expressed, the way the emotion comes out, and it's so raw and almost like he would have been terrified to show that side of his personality in other aspects of his life. And I gather he was quite sort of shy and withdrawn and a bit dry.
First violin Edward Dusenberry and viola Geraldine Walther. Bartok was in his mid-30s when he wrote his second quartet. He'd reached the style that had subsumed a folk-based idiom to a point where folk rhythms and tunes, real or invented, had become part of his own voice rather than add-ons. He wasn't in a particularly good place, professionally or personally, but that stays mostly in the background of this music, except in the desolate spaces of the finale. The three movements all feel as though Bartok knows exactly what he's doing in a very chromatic idiom, which feels hauntingly introspective in the first movement. The central scherzo is vivid and unvarnished, full of driving motoric rhythms, relentless in its pulverizing assault on the listener. And at the end, there's that hushed and fiendishly scampering viola lick Geraldine Walther was talking about. The finale's suffocating stillness seems to express absolute desolation. Bartok's second string quartet is performed by the Tokach Quartet.